does one know that soil is good? How do you know that? How can you tell if the soil in your yard or in a field is actually healthy? It has worms. Right, it has worms. Lots and lots of worms. Healthy soil is good for growing most, that is good for growing most food has worms in it. Aristotle is supposed to have said that worms are the intestines of the earth. I love that. Worms are the intestines of the earth. That worm even kind of looks a little bit like somebody's intestine. I learned this from an essay written by a woman named Amy Koss. She mentions this in her story about gardening. She describes herself as an enthusiastic and inept gardener, wanting to increase her vegetable output, and who doesn't want to do that, right? Wanting to increase her vegetable output, Amy recently had a big section of her asphalt driveway jackhammered up. The dirt under the 60-year-old asphalt was still and dry and compacted. She wrote, "I chipped away at it, I dug deeply, but discovered not a single worm or earwig, not even a roly-poly or any other trace of underground life except an ancient, withered root." I imagine that root was surprised when, pushing its way along as roots do, it suddenly found itself at such a hostile dead end. No more room. "I chopped up and sifted the hard, dry dirt," she said, "doused it with plenty of water, and dotted it with flower seeds and vegetable seeds. Now, to my delight, a few radish sprouts have come up, as have some pumpkin seeds. It's too soon to celebrate the successful resurrection of the dead earth. There has been no sign of wigglies on the ground, but a few butterflies have shown interest. And I do believe there is reason to hope for worms." Our own vegetable garden has areas where worms are plentiful and areas where worms are just beginning to take up residence. I've added 2 doses of manure to this area, many doses of steer manure, compost from our bin, and straw. Still not quite where it needs to be, but I am finding worms. The topsoil in our own country continues to be lost at alarming rates. Alarming rates. But agricultural practices persist that rob the earth that feeds us. The topsoil of our own souls can become also places of barren waste or hardened, sealed over surfaces, and we can feel like we are living in a dust bowl. Yet people often persist in practices that rob their souls of what transforms and heals. Life throws difficulties to us, right? Challenges and obstacles, that's part of life. Eventually, they will rob us of what nourishes us if we are not tending the soil of our own soul. The parable of the sower is such an amazing story because there are so many layers, so many ways it can work on us and in us. Sometimes I read it as an explanation for why only 25% of people who hear the good news of Christ actually respond. You know, 25% are like the path, in one ear and out the other. And 25% are like the rocky ground. They currently lack depth and insight to support growth. And 25% are surrounded by thorns, choked out by what Jesus refers to as the cares of the world and the lure of wealth. That's 75%. 75% of the people just aren't going to get it because they're not ready to receive. Sometimes I read the parable and I understand why those who receive and respond to the good news only do so 25% of the time. Sometimes, 25% of the time, the Word of God goes in one ear and out the other because we're not paying attention. And sometimes, 25% of the time, we're living on the surface, not rooted, not grounded in the grace and love of God. 25% of the time, we're distracted by what we think will make us happy. How do we let God help us make our souls into good soil where the riches of compassion and kindness for ourselves, for others, and for this world can take root, grow, flourish, and bear fruit? How do we go from the kitchen compost can and come out the bottom of that garden compost bin? And the stuff in the kitchen compost can is evidence we've been doing good work. There's a lot of work in that compost can, but there's been a cost. We've sweat, we've strived, we've toiled and tried. There have been disappointments along the way, disasters, regrets, and hardships. How can that detritus and debris be transformed into something useful, something hopeful, helpful, and healthful? Since April of this year, there have been a minimum of 2 heat waves each month. These out-of-season heat waves have been increasing in frequency for the last 5 years. Well, who made me the expert? How do I know that? I garden. Almost every single day from March through October, almost every single day, I am in the yard, in the garden, and I observe and keep track. And these out-of-season heat waves have decimated what should have been tremendous harvests this year. This last week, I was feeling really out of sorts, really down. I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, what was eating at me. I finally recognized that I was grieving the loss I'm seeing every day in our garden, a place that has provided for me great solace and spiritual nurture, has become a place that daily confronts me with desolation. Those feelings of loss, when we feel feelings of loss and desolation, those resonate with all those other feelings and experiences of loss and desolation that we carry with us. Suddenly, that kitchen compost can of our soul can be overflowing. I know mine was this week. It needed some attention. I had some work to do. Does life ever feel like that for you? Like the kitchen compost can is overflowing and you wish someone would take it out? When it does, I suspect that much of the time we say things like, well, it is what it is, and just have to get through it. And those are coping skills, sure. But I say unto you, we also need to listen to our soul crying out for care. Your soul is begging for some tending and some tenderness. Our souls cannot afford us seeking distractions and surface surfing. Our souls need refuge, healing, and transformation. And that requires some attention and some care on our part. There is one who walks with us, who is a gardener of souls, and knows how to help us permeate the parched landscape of our own spirit. Christ invites us into a relationship with God who knows our need. Christ shines a light on those places inside we need to pay attention to so God's Spirit can transform and heal them over time. And it takes time. Compost doesn't happen overnight, people. It takes time. And making it requires conditions that include moisture, air, some heat, and some raw material. We bring the raw material. And Christ is the living water, and God's Spirit breathes wisdom and the fire of the Spirit into the raw material of our lives. It takes patience, takes perseverance to tend to our own inner life. Tending your own inner life is some of the most important work you will ever do this side of eternity. Let Christ guide you. Allow God's space in you to work in you. But how? I mean, practically speaking, that all sounds good, but how do you do that? Well, there are lots of ways to connect with God. Prayer is one of those ways. Spiritual writer and Christian priest Richard Rohr writes, prayer is connecting with God. Simply put, prayer is connecting with God. It is not an attempt to change God's mind about us or about events. Such arrogance is what unbelievers make fun of, and often rightly so. Prayer is primarily about changing our own mind so that things like infinity, mystery, and forgiveness can resound within us. This kind of connecting is contemplation. There are many ways to engage in what people call contemplative prayer. There's no one way to pray contemplatively. And next Sunday after worship, I'm putting in a little plug for our compassion practice time. There'll be some contemplative grounding prayer. And I hope you'll consider hanging around for an extra 45 minutes and invest. Allow God to invest in your own soul. Now, I'm not saying contemplative prayer is the only way to connect with God. I'm saying it's an important practice. We find solace and encouragement in many ways. And contemplative prayer is the space in which we recognize, we take those times into that quiet space and allow them in us to aerate and turn over what is hard, breathing the life of God's Spirit into us. Rowan Williams is the Archbishop of the Church of England. In 2012, he addressed all the Catholic bishops, and he talked about contemplative prayer. He believes that contemplative prayer is revolutionary, revolutionary. Far from being just one kind of thing that Christians do, he says, it is the key to prayer. It is the key to liturgy, art, and ethics, the key to the essence of a renewed humanity that is capable of seeing the world and other subjects in the world with freedom. Freedom from self-oriented, acquisitive habits, freedom from the distorted understanding that come from them. To put it boldly, he said, contemplation, and this is really bold, is the only ultimate answer to the unreal and insane world that our financial systems and our advertising culture and our chaotic and unexamined emotions encourage us to inhabit. To learn contemplative prayer is to learn what we need so as to live truthfully, honestly, and lovingly. Every week at the table of Christ, we gather in communal contemplation every week. And it shapes us as a community, it shapes us as individuals, and we are fed, we are nourished. I invite you to consider this week ways you can step into some additional contemplative space for yourself to build the soil of your soul and discover the authentic freedom that only God can give. Only God can give us freedom, no one else. And to get us started, I invite you to listen to just these three verses from Psalm 19. Psalm 119 is the longest psalm of all. I've just got three verses for you. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Your decrees are my heritage forever. They are the joy of my heart. I'm going to read these three verses one more time. And if it helps you to listen deeply, you can close your eyes. This time, I invite you to listen for a word, for a phrase that shimmers for you. A word or a phrase that somehow seems like it's written just for you today. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Your decrees are my heritage forever. They are the joy of my heart. Receive that word or that phrase. Take it with you and allow it to settle in you. Listen for what it wants to show you, how it wants to guide you, heal you, encourage you. Let that be what allows the living water and the breath of life to turn over within your spirit and transform what needs healing in your heart this week. I invite you to stand together as we sing our hymn of dedication.